This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts Podcast with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine. A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine. If you know me, you know how obsessed I am with live performance. To me, nothing replaces being in a theater and the lights going down and the orchestra starts to play and that first moment of magic. And I know the way I feel about theater, some people feel about sports or opera or dance or comedy or food. And what if there was a place that you could go and find out which live events are going on near you that night? And then for a discount price, you can get off your couch, put down that clicker, and experience the magic that is live performance. Well, there is a place, goldstar.com. You just go to that website, you type in your city, and every amazing live event will be listed at discount prices. Theater, dance, comedy, film, food, concerts, sports. No more staying home. You are going to go out and build memories and experiences that expand your mind and heart through live performance with GoldStar.com. GoldStar is in 26 cities around the country with over 8 million members already signed up to find out what event is going on near you. So go to GoldStar.com. Get out of your house and build memories that are magic for you and your family. Expand your mind, expand your hearts. Go see live performance by using goldstar.com. Tell them Alana sent you.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Hey everyone, new episodes of Little Known Facts drop every Monday and you can find them on your favorite podcast provider. Also, if you go to the website, littleknownfactspodcast.com, you'll find behind the scenes photos, videos, and interviews and lots more on the gallery page. And if you are loving these intimate, candid conversations with all the artists who come on the show, please head over to the contributions page. I depend on these donations to continue to bring you these interviews every week. So if you love the show, please donate. Little known fact about my guest today. When he was 7 years old, he started getting laughs with his impeccable Jimmy Stewart impression, and he's been getting huge laughs ever since with his incredible comedic skills. Welcome, star of Dear Evan Hansen, Will Roland.
A-OK. A-OK.
Everyone, my guest today is the award-winning Broadway star, Will Roland. Before being cast as Jared Kleiman in Dear Evan Hansen, Will began his career in the theater with roles in Billy Witch, Wonderful Town, and The Black Suits, to name a few. He stars in the film One Penny. On TV, he's appeared in Red Oaks and The Mysteries of Laura. He won the Broadway.com Audience Choice Award for Funniest Performance.
Favorite funny performance. I think it's important that we say favorite and okay. Not best or funniest.
I agree.
Because it feels like it was a popularity contest and
yes,
I won.
And you won. And let's underline and highlight that fact.
Favorite.
And it, by the way, let's be honest, it's nice to be nominated, but it's better to win.
They're both good.
Do you agree though?
Yes.
Winning is better. He hosts a hilarious vlog about his life on stage and off called Sincerely Me, which allows viewers backstage access to life with the Dear Evan Hansen cast. He has a cabaret show called Loser Songs, An Evening with Will Roland. He's an accomplished musician. He is a graduate of NYU, or New York University, where he majored in musical theater. He's talented and hilarious. Welcome, Will Roland, to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. That was like the nicest anything anyone's ever read about me.
Is that true? Well, you can take it home.
I'm gonna frame it. I've never been described as an award-winning Broadway actor before.
You are.
That's a pretty big deal.
It is a big deal.
Wow.
In fact, from now on, every bio, that's how it begins.
That's it.
You
I gotta update
that.
My own bio.
You should demand that.
I worry. People know that I write my own bio. You know, everybody who's ever submitted a bio knows that you get an email from a company manager that's like, please send us your bio, 75 words or less. And so if it begins with, Will Roland is an award-winning Broadway actor.
Well, this is how you...
Everyone will know.
This is what my guests do to do the old bait and switch. They're like, let me have my people send it.
Oh,
and then a moment later, from willroland@gmail.com.
I didn't write that.
I don't know. That's so weird that my people have the same email address as me. I can't explain it. That's how much they love me. I'm their only client. Well, I just have to say that everything I said is true. Let's start with that. And I feel you're one of these people, and this may be true for anyone who meets you. There's something about you that makes everyone feel like they've known you for a very long time, even if they haven't. Is that something other people have said?
You know, it rings a bell a little bit. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a thing that I would love, you know, it's the kind of thing that I would love people to say about me. So maybe I subconsciously try to make that happen, because
yes.
It's like the kind of thing that I want. I want to be like, he's so easy to talk to. He's such a regular guy.
He's so warm.
He's so warm. He's so friendly.
Well, you've kind of had an extraordinary career for the very short amount of time you've actually been a grown-up and could have a career. Before we get into Dear Evan Hansen, which is a remarkable thing that's happened both to you and the universe in the last couple of years, where did you grow up and what was the relationship to performing in the arts in your home?
So when I was little, we lived right here in Manhattan. We lived in the Village.
Known as the greatest city in the world.
Great. Thank you, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
You're welcome.
And it's true. I lived there until I was 8.
Do you have a memory of that?
I do. Yeah, I remember it very distinctly. I went to New York City Public School. Went to PS 41, right on 11th Street and 6th Avenue.
I know it so well.
Yeah, and we lived at 808 Broadway, which is 11th and Broadway. And I remember distinctly my commute straight. It was like a straight shot down 11th Street. And I had such distinct memories of that when I eventually when I moved to NYU, like I moved into my dorm, I was very disoriented because on all maps, up is north, and out my front door, up like was the way to school. So I just
Little Will.
Yeah,
Little
Will.
Not
Roland.
College Will. Yeah.
You know, College Will was a little bit like, wait a second, I think I'm going north right now. It took me a full couple like weeks to sort of be like, oh no, like that street that I remember so viscerally actually ran east west.
That's right.
I had to like rewire my brain.
Well, known fact about New York City, generally the odd numbered streets head east west,
mm-hmm.
and the non odd numbered streets, the even numbers, like 20th Street, goes west east. So that's a good little thing to know for people who don't live here. Or it sounds like you had to get a compass.
And the even
sorts.
Numbers are are always on the south side of the street for the most part.
The even number addresses.
The even number addresses,
that's
exactly.
Right.
Like 200
where
is
we
on
are
the south
today.
Side of the street.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, that was great. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, this was
amazing.
Great. It's been really nice. Thanks.
I mean, I'm done. I got nothing.
That's everything.
That is everything. So the point being, you started out in the city.
Yes.
Now, the East Village is sort of known, it has had many lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every decade, the East Village kind of becomes something else.
Yes. Right now, it's very chic. It's very wealthy people pretending they have no money and like being bohemian. But when I lived there, it was very much in transformation. I was born in 1989, and we lived there until 1998. So in that time, New York was very much in an economic boom, and Rudy Giuliani was mayor, and, you know, we were broken windows policing. And the East Village, like when I was born, was actually like kind of a dodgy place. But by the time we moved away, was like very nice. And we like, you know, my father like sold our apartment and we made like a lot of money from when we bought it. But then we found out that like 3 years later, someone had made like 10 times the amount of money we sold it for.
Yes, we didn't do so great.
It's become like, you know, the most expensive real estate in the world. But when I was there, it was like very sort of unassuming. And my mother has always been just a full-time mom.
Okay.
And my dad is an antique dealer and auctioneer and appraiser. And so, like, very much in my life.
Auctioneer, like do I hear 4,000?
Yeah,
do I hear 4,000?
All of it. All of the above. And he does
that. Are you good at that? Can you do that?
I'm pretty good at it. You know, okay. I did it for BCFA at Dear Evan Hansen.
You did?
I did on when we did our like, collecting in April or wherever it was. Every night, we would take the cast that had been sawed off of Ben Platt's arm, and we would sign
sometimes
it.
Sometimes his arm.
And sometimes his arm. Sometimes the whole
bidders.
Arm, too. You know, so they could make a clone Ben at home.
That's right.
$1 million for the arm of Tony Award winner Ben Platt.
That would have been great.
Yeah. But
and
I
you
didn't.
Know what? He's so nice, he would have.
He would have. He would give it literally an arm and a leg for BCFA.
That's right.
But yeah, no, we made a lot of money. It was like really great. We raised like $100,000 just selling like, you know, sweaty arm casts.
That's the
but
best feeling.
I was
on
the auctioneer.
So give us a little like.
Oh, all right. Okay, so let's. I'm going to auction this bottle of Smart Water. All right, so
Smart Water, if you're listening,
sponsor
always,
us.
Always happy to have you.
I would love to have you here.
Makes you smarter.
How do we say glacio? Glasso?
Yes.
Glasso. So lot one is a Glasso Smart Water. It measures about 8 inches high. This one's about 3/4 full. Let's start the bidding at $200. Do I have 200 anywhere? I've got 200 bid with the lady across the table. I've got 200 bid. Oh, and the gentleman on the other side of the booth is 300. I've got 300 outside the booth. Do I hear four? I've got 300 on the booth. Oh, I've got four. 40 with the lady in the headphones. 40 with the lady in the headphones. I've got four and I've got 500 outside. 500 looking for five, looking for six. I've got 500 looking for six. Six with the lady in the headphones, 600 going once, going twice. Sold the Glasso Smart Water for $600 plus buyer's premium.
My goodness. By the way, I mean, so far so
counting.
Good on the Broadway career front, but not for nothing.
Got to back up. It's a terrible industry. It's an industry in decline. I don't want to be an auctioneer.
Was there an auction? Is there a home for this business that people can go
there
into?
There is. It's okay. Roland Auctions.
And did you hang out there as a kid?
Yeah. I have many memories of like warehouses just filled with like old. You know, the smell of old wood is a very like visceral thing for me. I walk into a room. And I'm like an old person's house, and it smells like my childhood. I had like a little antique tricycle that I used to like tool around in, you know, we've been in a lot of like locations. We've been on 11th Street in like 8 different addresses. And then we had a warehouse in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And we had a warehouse in Sunset Park, and we had a location out in Locust Valley on Long Island. And, you know,
your mom, you said was at home with
yeah.
you. Did he teach you stuff about the
you
value
know,
of
like
stuff
a little bit,
and
yeah.
what things are?
I mean, you can smell silver and, you know, I know a little bit about like art valuation and, you know, it's sort of the like gross, like the very commerce side of fine art. I know a lot about in terms of like how to price a painting and how to appraise, jewelry and silver and, you know, how to weigh things and how to, you know, just stuff like that.
Was there a moment in your... Do you have siblings, by the way?
I do. I have a little sister.
So
her name is Valerie.
Where's Valerie?
Valerie is... she was working for Roland Auctions for a while.
Okay.
And the last year, she started working for Christie's, which is a much more upscale place to work.
So not a competitor as much as a...
No, because it's such a large ecosystem. You know, it's the kind of thing where, like, Christie's will sell in a day what we sell annually. So it's not like, you know, they're like,
I get why she moved
we
to
don't
Christie's.
Want this. Exactly.
That sounds better.
Yeah, no, she's got like a crazy job actually. Cause she's like, she's front desk, like she's, you know, reception or client service, client relations, whatever it is. But she like, sometimes it's like, this is so-and-so and he's coming into the gallery today. This is a picture of him and he's going to not ask for the specialist when he gets here, but you need to call her immediately when he
because
shows up so that they can
person.
Run into each other in the gallery and she can walk him through a specific way so that when he sees his painting, he's not upset with where it's been hung.
Okay.
This is true.
Right. Like that's a whole other
yeah,
world.
Because, you know, they have a Da Vinci that they're selling right now. It's like $100 million painting.
And where like, is that?
It's actually in London at the moment.
Okay.
But it'll be back very soon.
Right.
And we can see it before.
That's
it's the last.
Best.
There are only 20 surviving Da Vinci oil paintings. All of them are in museums. This was the very last one to come out of a private collection. And they got it. And they're very happy about it.
That is unbelievable. Should
yeah.
we share with everyone that I was the owner of that piece?
Yeah, is it you?
Weird?
Well,
yeah.
you sold it to, right now it's owned by a Russian oligarch.
Uh-huh.
If you want to buy something
oligarch.
Beautiful,
yeah.
but pay for something evil, this is the painting for you.
Moving on. So that's fantastic. And I could talk about that. And we will.
So could I, but it's terrible.
For a million hours. So was there ever a moment where you thought that's what you were going to do?
No, never that. Never that. You know, my family, I feel like some people have these stories of like adversity. I do not within my home, like have that story. Like my parents are incredibly supportive and incredibly like they're, I could like go onto the stage. I could like take a dump and they would like just never stop clapping. They're really, I mean, you know, but I think everyone needs someone like that.
Well, let's talk about that because this is a business that many people go into for all sorts of reasons. Mm-hmm. Some do it because they felt like they never got enough or never got approval and they're kind of seeking it constantly. Some people got so much love and approval that they needed it at a sort of constant.
I'm a little bit in that vein. Yeah.
So we're just keeping it going.
Exactly. I've got a reservoir to fill with compliments.
All right.
You helped today hugely with that intro.
Well, mom and pa Roland called me and they were like, listen, our boy is an award-winning Broadway actor. So let's talk
about
this.
Keep saying it a lot.
I will, my love. It's so done. So you move.
I did. Yeah, we moved to Long Island when I'm 8.
And when do you realize I sing better than almost everyone else, and I'm really funny?
You know, I don't realize that for a long time. The funny thing really sort of rears its head in middle school. I transfer from the Locust Valley Public School to Friends Academy, ooh, which is a very nice
very
college
posh
preparatory school,
yes,
on the North Shore of Long Island, the Gold Coast. It's Gatsby country. I went there basically for free because we were really broke. But like people pay $30,000 a year to go there.
And now much more.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Now it's like it's incredible. But so I went to this school and they had, first of all, they had like a spectacular theater program there. But like,
were you super smart and that's why they took you and were happy to have
you? I was,
you?
Yeah. No, I was like, I did like really well on like tests and stuff. It was actually an amazing story because I applied. Basically, my dad, he works with this sort of socialite in our town who's this wonderful woman. Her name is Barry Osborne. And my dad was doing a charity auction for the church in the town where Barry is, like, you know, very active.
The person.
Yeah, St. John's of Laddingtown. And I was like 10. And he like brought me with him to this like, you know, charity event. He's like, come see, you know, bring your son to work day. It's on a weekend. And I'm, you know, you can see me do an auction. And, you know, I think he was actually donating appraisal services.
That's,
you know,
very cool.
Ladies could come in with their jewelry and he would weigh it and stuff like that. So I was there and I was like, you know, very like loquacious, you know, active kid, very sort of like, I wasn't like running around, but I would just talk a mile a minute. And Barry found that very enchanting. And she was like, Bill, you have to send that son of yours to Friends Academy. And he was like, oh no, it's too expensive. Oh, you should just try it. So I applied to go in fifth grade. I applied, I got in, they offered us a financial aid package. It was still incredibly expensive. And we were like, oh, no way. So a year later, you know, Barry's like, oh, is William at French Academy now? My dad says, oh, no, it was too expensive and we couldn't do it.
She but goes, well, thank you, Barry.
Have him apply again, Bill. Have him apply again. So I applied again to start in sixth grade and I got in and it was too expensive despite the financial aid. And we said no. And then about a week after we declined, my dad got a phone call, and it was John Gambling, local radio personality and head of the board of trustees at Friends Academy. And he's like, hello, is this Bill Roland? And my dad was like, yes, it is. Well, I'm John Gambling, and I'm on the board of trustees here at Friends Academy. I've received a phone call from a prestigious alumna of ours, a Miss Barry Osborne, and she's instructed me to give you whatever you ask for on this phone call. And so we worked out a deal whereby I paid like a pittance.
$1.
To go, basically. I mean,
yeah.
Yes, relatively.
$1.
I paid $1 a year to go to Friends Academy.
Yeah.
And it was a very, it's inspired a strong belief in sort of like faith and like, or fate, you know, like the sort of
did
like, there's an order in the universe. Things are supposed to happen and they do.
And did you feel like you fit in?
Yeah, I loved it there. But I was very smart and very clever. And I was like a real douchebag. And I very quickly realized like, oh, like when I say the first thing that comes into my mind about that kid, everyone laughs,
mm-hmm.
Which made me into like kind of a bully, like kind of a terrible bully. And it's experiences that I draw on in the play because, like, I think I had a few sort of interventions in my behavior that I luckily, like, sort of, I reformed, I repented and sort of like started being a nice person. But I think like in an alternate universe, like nobody sort of gave me the feedback that I needed to hear. And I just went on like being a douchebag for the rest of my life.
Right.
And I think that, that's like, that's my sort of.
That's intense.
That tale. It was very intense.
Yes. So when you look back on that time, like, do you feel like you were able to apologize to people at the time? Do you feel like...
You know, many of them,
dead.
And they're all dead.
Did I say I insulted them? I actually killed them.
I murdered them.
Yes, I murdered. Murder.
The murder. It's not called Muckduck. I went to, a lot of them became my friends actually in high school. I made very active efforts to repair things that I had done. And, you know, it's a time in your life where you forgive and forget. Like you're 13 years old and like somebody was mean to you last week, but they're nice to you this week and you're just happy they're not being mean to you anymore. But that was when I started doing, theater. It started with choir for me in like third grade and I like really enjoyed choir, but by the time I got to Friends Academy, they had this spectacular theater and this spectacular theater program.
Getting cast?
I did. We did the middle school play my sixth grade year, which was a bunch of original works written by the faculty there. And then near the end of the year, they selected six middle schoolers to be in the high school production.
That's a big deal, Will.
It was a big deal. And it Alana. Remains, it was my
it's
first
still...
big break.
Yeah.
I was cast in Once on This Island, which you look at me and you're like, really?
They're bringing it back right now.
You know, it was...
no small part.
You're picturing the Friends Academy production of Once on This Island
sure.
right now. It was more diverse than you think.
Really?
It wasn't as much of a crime
okay.
as you think it is.
Okay.
I mean, I was still in it. So, you know, as were people who
but
looked like me.
But not everyone was Will Roland.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So there it was
Will.
Not as much of a... Looking back, I'm like, you know what? It's a great show. And we got most of the way there. So
sure.
It's
well, when you go see it, you're going to be filled with emotion.
Oh, I'm going to just be like mouthing along and weeping
totally.
The whole time. It's one of my favorites. It's beautiful.
So then in high school, you continue.
Yes, I jumped in with both feet.
Department.
I was like, yeah. And I was doing all the shows and I was like, you know, I was a freshman and I was like, oh, like, what am I doing in the spring? Like, you're doing the middle school play, but I'm not in middle school anymore. Like, can I assist on that? And they're like, well, usually we don't have freshmen assist on the middle school play. And I was like, please. And they're like, okay, fine. And then like there was the summer camp at Friends Academy called Artists Institute. And they were like, oh, we don't usually have, you know, I didn't want to be like a student anymore. And I was like, oh, can I be, you know, we called them interns instead of counselors. So I was like, can I be, in the intern training program? And they're like, oh, we don't really usually have ninth graders in it. And I was like, no, please. So I was like all that. And then by senior year, it was like I was taking like four like classes and then like choir and chamber choir and music history and an opera appreciation class that was me and three other people and took place at a lunchtime, you know, like.
And are you coming into the city to see Broadway shows?
Is yeah,
that
I'm coming in on the
family?
Weekends
yeah.
and, you know, and school trips. And we did like, you know, my senior year, we did this amazing trip to London or to England, I should say, because we did our first, we went for we spent seven nights there and we saw seven shows. And our first weekend there, we like landed at Heathrow and we drove straight to Stratford. We went to the Royal Shakespeare Company and we saw this is when they were doing all of the histories in rep. So we saw like we got there like Friday evening and we had dinner and we saw Henry VI Part One. And then we got up, we had breakfast, we saw Henry VI Part II, we had lunch, we saw Henry VI Part III, and then we had dinner and we saw Richard III, all with the same cast, all with the same, you know, scenic design and design concept. It was like, and we were like, because we were jet lagged and like, it was like the theater was everywhere.
Also, you didn't understand a word any of them were saying.
No, it was great because we got a synopsis before
right,
each one, because
right.
we had this great teacher, you know, her name is Tracy Foster, she was spectacular, and give your children
it's
to her.
It's all about the teachers.
It really, really, really is. And then we saw that production of Equus with Daniel Radcliffe and Richard Griffiths. And we saw a production of Faust, by the company that did Sleep No More. And I was like, this is the coolest thing. Too bad they'll never bring anything like this to New York. And then they did. And it's a big success. Good for them. And we saw Corum Boy before it came to Broadway. We closed it out with The Tempest on the West End with Patrick Stewart as Prospero. And it was like the most for me at like 18 years old. And I had like gotten into NYU and I was going to study voice. And I was like, you know, like who knows? Like I want to study this, but who knows what I want to do? And like after that trip, I was like, I want to be a fucking actor. This is the most amazing thing in the world I've ever seen. You know, I was like so juiced. Yeah, it is all about the teachers. And yeah, so like we did, we went on that trip and I would go see, you know, shows on the weekends when I was here. It was really nice to be like in and around this city.
Were you obsessive or passionate?
I would say I was passionate. I wouldn't say I was obsessive. I've always sort of been really turned off by, this is the bully in me, like always existing, but I've always been really turned off by like people in my life who are like, theater is everything and all of the above. And I'm like, you know, like I'm pursuing this professionally and like there's a lot of other things in my life.
Right.
And like, if you can't find some other things in your life, you should look harder for them. it's the most wonderful thing, you know, like the pursuit of this craft, but also like, you know, Broadway and the community is all great, but like there's so much other stuff out there.
Right.
You know, I'm like a big sci-fi nerd. I'm like a, you know, I don't know. Like,
were
I have
you
this
a
whole,
video game kid?
Yeah, big time, big time. Yeah, no, I had like a bad World of Warcraft addiction my junior and senior year of high school that was
like
really
fun.
Like
an intervention that had to happen or you were able to still do okay?
It was
in
a self-induced intervention. It was sort of like one day you could like, you can type played into the game and it'll tell you like how much you've played. And after 2 years of like being a subscriber on the game, I had played 88 days. And I was like,
that's a lot of days.
Wait a second. There's only been like
88 days. It's like
500 or 600 days. And 80 of them were spent logged into this game. That's messed up, man. So I had to once I factored in how much I'd been sleeping, and how much time I spent eating, and how much time is like truly unavailable to me to play World of Warcraft, like at school, I was like, oh my God, this is a huge problem.
So you go to NYU where you begin to learn craft?
Yeah, big time. It was, I feel like I had like a great foundation of like the really fundamental things about like what is acting,
by
what
doing
is theater,
by being in plays.
Yeah, and we had like
great,
you know,
great
we had great classes, and yeah, I'd seen great plays and done plays. I had a lot of like on the job training, as it were. And then when I went to NYU, they were very technique focused and very focused on like, you know, you don't do any shows your freshman year, and you don't. And I was at the Steinhardt School, so I got a music degree actually. And I went into my first voice lesson, which, you know, I had like an hour a week for 4 years. And he was like, oh, have you ever taken voice lessons? I was like, oh, no, not really. Like, I've been in some shows and, you know, but I've never like had a voice lesson. I've like learned songs and sang songs. And I've been in choirs. And that I think was like really valuable to me. As I started to learn a new technique, I did not have to forget what I had been doing proper because I didn't really have anything. You know,
right.
I just sort of like
they weren't undoing,
you
know, bad habits. You
exactly.
had no right.
I had bad habits, but they weren't solidified in like, oh, that's what I do. It was just like, oh, this is really hard to do. And it was like, oh great, let's spend the next 3 years like making that easier.
So when you were at school, did you feel competitive with others? Were you like, oh, I love this is my new family? What was the vibe in that department?
It was very much like a continuation of the high school vibe a little bit. There were 21 kids in the class. And after like a year and a half, you knew like everything about everybody. And like, you know, we sort of would get to that point where it's like, I knew the four gestures that you would do when you sing. And like, you know, oh,
you don't
it's
know
like
my four gestures.
I would after
I
a
five.
Year and a half in
yeah.
class.
Yeah.
I have, for me, it's corn cobs. You won't be able to see it through the microphone, but it's, do you want these corn cobs? Because I could give you these corn cobs. I'll take these corn cobs away if you don't want them, but I think you want these corn cobs.
But those are the hand gestures with which you express your songs.
Yeah, there was one girl in our class who had blades. Her just like her hands would be, they would just be convex.
So when she would sing.
Exactly. Her hands would, they would go down.
Does Jared
or they would go forward.
And Dear Evan Hansen have, I'm trying to think, because I have seen it more than once. Do you have
I'm very
gestures?
Illustrative. Mm. Jared loves to count. So does Will. Will loves, like, if you give Will a line hand with a list in it, Will will instinctively, at the table read, count those things on his hands. That's one of his favorite acting gestures.
Great.
That's a new one since I got rid of the corn cobs. The other thing that Jared loves to do is illustrate. So, you know, I will say, that's why I got to move these buttons, gesture to buttons, before the bottom drops out, gesture to the bottom of the Connor Murphy memorabilia market. I also love to place Sabrina Patel in her wristbands, Matt Holzer in his t-shirts. They're all like, everything needs a place. And that actually developed because I studied sign language, studied American Sign Language in college. And it was a thing that I started developing. It started bleeding over into my acting classes because in sign language, when you're talking about multiple topics, you place them in space. So you say like, oh, this is Alana and she's blonde and blah, 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 and all these things. And you'd be like, and this is Will and he has glasses and blah, blah, blah. And so it'll be like, you know, and Will and Alana would like meet. And so you will actually.
So
like,
you have Will on the right and Alana on the left.
Exactly.
And then when we meet, you move it all to
you
the
move
center.
Them together
the,
and then you gesture to them as a group. And like all that stuff is like that sort of bled into my acting. In a way that I didn't really realize until I was like doing it. And I was like, oh, this is not a bad habit. You know, someone will tell me to stop doing it someday and I'll stop doing it that day.
Right. If it's not right.
Right.
If it's not right for the guy.
Go back to doing it the next day.
So when you get out of school, do you already have an agent? Are you looking at backstage? Like, how does one begin when you get out of NYU? It's the Steinhardt?
Mm-hmm. The Steinhardt School, yes, which is the School of Culture, Education, and Human Development.
Yeah,
so it's like
it
the
is.
School of Miscellaneous Studies
nice.
At NYU.
We'll take your check. Yes, we will.
Yes, we will.
What was her name? Where's Barry Osborne when we need
him?
Oh,
I know. Seriously.
Barry.
What was funny was that Jim Dolan, who is the owner of the Rangers in Madison Square Garden, he built the theater at my high school. It was called the Helen A. Dolan Center. That's his grandmother's name. Because I went to school with all the Dolan kids. And then I went to college with all the Dolan kids. And he was like, there's no good recording studio here. So while I was there, they like gut renovated the sixth floor at Steinhardt. And they built the James L. Dolan Recording Studio, which is the most technologically advanced recording studio in New York. And like...
That's crazy.
No one's allowed into it.
Right.
At least
but
not
you guys
the students.
Were, or
oh,
who
I've,
got to
I've
use
never
it.
Been inside.
Wait, but so who uses it?
I don't know.
Let's go.
Let's go.
We're
going,
in.
We're going right
in.
Now.
So when you get out, do you have an agent?
No, I don't have. What I have is I have a few teachers and writers who really believe in me and also have some professional stuff that they're doing. So I have a showcase. I take a few meetings, one of which is with the people who are now my manager, but they did not sign me that day. They were like, oh, you know, keep us posted about what you do. The first thing I did was go back to the summer camp. It was my, like, let's see, I started teaching there in 2004, so it was 2011. It's my seventh summer teaching there. That summer, one of the teachers there has written a play. And we actually have, like, crowdfunded, we're going to take the play to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. So my first thing that I did out of college was go teach at 6 weeks of a summer camp, then immediately pack up with some of my students and some of my colleagues and some of my mentors. We fly to Scotland, and I am a chaperone slash actor, and I'm compensated in the form of, like, some souvenirs and some dinners, you know, and I'm a chaperone slash actor, and I'm also helping, you know, set up and break down because it's a Fringe Festival.
And are you so happy?
Oh, my God, it's the time
You're
of my
so
life.
Happy.
I'm exhausted all the time, it is. But I'm just like having a blast. And I come back. And the first thing that I get is I get a call from Paul Davis, who's a lovely casting director. And he says, hey, so John Simpkins, who was one of my teachers in college, really like the main guy. He's directing a play at 5959. And it's, you know, it's a 5-person play and, you know, pays $300 a week. And, you know, we'd like to have you come in and audition for it. And that was my first job. And it was like it was the fall after I had graduated and I was working now at my high school. I was there.
So you're living at home again?
No, I'm living in my Park Slope apartment where I still live, where I moved in my junior year.
Okay.
And I'm commuting. So I'm getting up at 6 a.m. I'm getting on the 710 train at Atlantic Terminal and taking the Long Island Railroad
so
out to Locust Valley.
That's so sexy, Will.
When I can wrangle a ride, I'm getting a ride from the train station to Friends Academy. And I'm arriving at like, you know, 10 minutes to 9. And when I can't wrangle a ride, I'm walking. And I arrive at like 5 minutes after 9. I work there as their assistant technical director and resident lighting designer.
So you light.
I do. I do all kinds of stuff.
This is incredible.
It's
but
very
when you
fun.
Were saying earlier about like, I love theater, but I have all these other interests. You even have other things you can do within the theater.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've worked as an electrician, and that's been a great source of like day job support for me. So I'm the resident lighting designer there. I'm designing their production of As You Like It in the fall, which is set in like the Dust Bowl Midwest.
So you're doing some creative lighting.
Yeah. I work there until 4:00, and then I get on the 4:30 train and I commute back into Manhattan, and I get off at Penn Station and I go up to East 59th Street and I have a 6:30 call for a 7:00 show.
And you're in an off-Broadway show.
And I'm in an off-Broadway play.
Now, are you equity?
I am not at this point. Oh, okay. Hell no. This is like, this is
ratchet. Were you equity
ratchet.
Before Dear Evan Hansen?
I was, but I had just gotten my equity card. I had turned it down twice. Yeah, I had turned it down twice before Dear Evan Hansen. Well, they would have given it to me.
I hope so.
I would hope so. Yeah, right. I just joined SAG last week.
That's so exciting.
It is very exciting. It's very expensive.
It's crazy. Okay, so you get this play.
Yeah, I get the play.
And what a tribute and testament to your, like, sometimes you go through school and the teacher said you're really good. Your teacher actually cast you within a year after graduating.
Yeah.
So that must have been
He did it again, too, a year later. He's really been John Simpkins.
We love you.
We love you, John Simpkins. He's now the head of the program at Penn State. If you're looking at musical theater programs, go study with John Simpkins. He taught me nearly everything. Between Tracy Foster at Friends Academy and John Simpkins, nearly everything I know.
Unbelievable. Little Michael Greif.
Exactly.
With a little measure.
Who? Never heard of him.
That hack.
Oh, my God.
I'm so worried about Michael Greif.
Is he going to be all right?
Is he going to be all right?
Is his career going to survive?
Like, I mean, I really, you know what? Let's
he's
hope.
Got, he's promising. He's a promising, burgeoning, he's an emerging director.
An emerging genius director. So funny, I knew Michael Greif. My moment like yours after school is I got cast in the Unicorn Theater Company, which was the non-equity company of the Berkshire Theater Festival.
Oh, yes.
And that summer, there was a director named Michael Greif who was also just starting out, and he directed a production of Cloud Nine that I was cast in. And I was like, in love immediately. We had the best time. And
he's
I was like,
wonderful.
He's my friend for my whole life. And then we came back to the city, and an old friend of it asked him to come direct something called Machinal, a play at my theater company called Naked Angels.
Yes.
And so I really did know Michael Greif, all kidding aside, when we're like promising.
When he was
I was like,
burgeoning
this guy
director.
Seems really special.
Yeah.
And then Rent happened and a lot of people agreed with me. But that was a very exciting thing to kind of watch.
That's amazing. That's unbelievable. I love that so much.
The rise of those sorts of talents and be there before everyone else kind of knew who they were. It's very exciting. And I feel that way having seen you and Ben Platt in, what was the
name?
In
the Black Suits.
In the Black Suits.
So that is the other job that John Simpkins gave me.
John!
John's got an eye for talent. I would like to point out that we did two productions of the Black Suits in a workshop that I was involved with.
Yeah.
The first one, Ben Platt played the lead, Chris Thurzer. In the workshop, Ben was unavailable, and Taylor Trench played Chris Thurzer. And then in the third production, a fellow named Kobe Getzug, who would also be a really good Evan Hansen, played Chris Thurzer, the lead. So I finished the play, and then I was like, I did Wonderful Town at the Gallery of Players, and that was like terrible. But it was fun. But it wasn't fun, actually. I look back on it, and it's fun, but it was no fun at the time. And then John was like, so I actually saw the Black Suits at the Public. They did like a stage reading of it in 2008. And so it was my summer after my freshman year of college, and I had met Joe Iconis that year, and we had become friends, and he's such a great writer. And a dear friend
Joe
to me
Iconis
now.
Joe Iconis and the family?
Yeah.
Is that the name? Okay.
And so Joe and John are like some of my dearest friends in the whole world. And so I went to see his great musical that they were doing at the Public in in a little no-frills production that summer. And I loved it. I was like, this is the best show. I love this show. It's about a Long Island garage band. And like, I connect with it. And it's like, there's fun little like things, like places I know. And I just think this is such a beautiful story. It's got like a Stand By Me kind of like coming of age tale in it.
And great music.
Great music. Yeah. You know, like that song Blue Hair that everybody loves is in that show. And so I just loved it. And then John was like, so we're doing a reading of it in like April, wondering if you'd be available to come do the reading. I was like, sign me up. So I went and I did the reading of it. And then he was like, so, you know, this is after the reading. He was like, you know, we're going to have auditions for this. We're doing it at Barrington Stage Company this summer. And, you know, I really want you to come in for it. But here's the thing. He said, they don't want any of like Joe's people and my people to be in the show. So when you come to the audition, please, you know, like be familiar, you know, don't act like you don't know us, but like don't be too familiar with us.
And don't point your corn cobs at us.
Don't point your corn cobs at me, young man. You sing to Bill Finn, all right?
Bill Finn, by the way.
Love Bill Finn.
Yes.
Oh, God, Bill. Bill was crazy in those callbacks. Bill's still crazy. I'd tell him it to his face. Okay. So I auditioned for it, I got it. And that was how I met Ben Platt. And John was like, yeah, we found this kid. He's 18. He's going to Columbia in the fall. He's, like, crazy talented. You know, and then we got this other guy. His name's Harrison, and he was in Carolina Change on Broadway. And so, like, you know, we get up there, and it's this summer, and it's me and Ben Platt and our friend Harrison Chad, who it turns out they were both in Carolina Change at different points in the same production, and this talented young lady named Sarah Citrullo and this guy named Jason Haidt and Annie Golden. Like, it was the incredible dream team up at Barrington that summer. And it was like the show was beautiful. And it like kind of broke my heart a little bit, the show, because I like in my own mind had like built these designs of like, oh, this is going to be it. Like, this is going to be my Broadway debut.
Right. The show is so good.
Mm-hmm. And everyone's going to love it. You know, we did that production at Barrington, then we did that workshop, and then we brought it to Center Theater Group out in LA. We did it out there. We were so excited. And then there was like these issues with the producer who sort of said she had some money. It turns out she didn't have the money. And like, you know, a donor at the theater sort of covered the gap. But so now we're like out in LA and like no one's paying to have John and Joe out there with us. And there's no producer. And the reviews come out and they're bad. And like, you know, the guy at the LA Times just hated it for no reason at all. He got all kinds of things wrong in his review. It was clear that he wasn't even paying attention. And then that was it.
Right.
And then I like came back. It was like Thanksgiving and I had a hernia. I had done the whole production with a hernia. I wore this weird belt to keep my hernia in. So I came home.
And I'm really sorry.
Heartbroken with my hernia. And I had hernia surgery.
Right. Like you do.
I was healed. It was my second hernia. It was on both sides.
Okay. Sorry.
Gotcha. I knew that would get you. It's so sad.
Yes, go on. Because I know there's a happy ending. Otherwise, I'd be on the
floor
sobbing.
So So I'm home now. It's Christmas. And I do the Christmas show with Joe. You know, Joy Conniston does this great Christmas show every year. Come to it. It's 54 Below. It's the most fun in the world. It was the first year that we were at 54 Below, or the second year, actually. But it was the first year that Jen Tepper worked there. She got the job while we were out doing the black suits in LA.
That's
it was amazing.
Exciting.
It was a magical time. So we did Christmas, and then it was January, and it was cold. It was February, and it was cold. And then I met a nice lady at a bar who is now my girlfriend 3.5 years later.
Mazel.
Yeah.
Mazel
we met at Characters across
That's
the street from 54
sweet.
Below.
So at some point, you get a call to audition for a reading.
Yes. This is 6 months later.
As the story goes.
Exactly. I'm the dejected young man who gets invited to audition for the untitled Pasek Paul Levinson musical that Michael Greif is directing. And I actually had booked a Nymph show in the meanwhile, so I was very excited. I'm developing a new musical.
And
I feel good again.
It's always great to go in when you already have a job.
Yeah, you always feel better.
Desperation
Everyone's nicer
is
to
less
you.
Intense.
Yeah, and,
right?
and the casting director's, oh, it's so good to see you. Oh my God,
thanks for coming in.
Thanks for making time for us. Is what the dialogue becomes when you're
Amazing.
In a show. It's like, you know, I'm in a show. I'm free all day.
That's
like
right.
I have nothing to do.
So walk us through your first audition for Dear Evan Hansen.
Okay, so I'm in the hallway. And I run into my friend Elise, who is a spectacularly talented actor. Her name is Elise Allen Lewis, and she was in Mamma Mia, and she was in Disaster and Amelie, and we actually just did a reading together this morning at NAMPT. So we're in that Nymph show together. And I run into her in the lobby at Pearl. I was like, oh, were you auditioning for this Pasek Paul Levinson show? She goes, yeah, it went terrible. I was like, oh, great. Okay. See you tonight.
Yeah.
And then I get up to the hallway and I like look around and I'm like, oh, this is kind of a who's who of like young musical theater actors who I, whether or not I have a personal relationship with everybody in this hallway, I know everyone in this hallway. And I was like, how the fuck did I get in here? First of all. And then I ran into this actor whose name I'm not going to say because I'm classy, but I'll say it to you later.
Okay.
But this actor who I don't really like. And in that sort of that 6 months since I had gotten back from the black suits, I'd seen him at a bunch of auditions. And he had sort of psyched me out, like in the hallway. I don't know if he did it on purpose. It kind of felt like he was doing it on purpose, but like our perceptions are inherently skewed in those moments when the power relationship is uneven. And he'd like booked some of the jobs that like I had been in for. And I was like, oh fuck, here's this guy. So he went right before me. And I was like listening to his audition while like going over my sides. And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to book it. Like, you know, I do all this stuff with Joe Iconis and these Paskin Paul are going to want me. And, you know, I don't belong here. So I went in and I did my audition and I sang a great cut of Man Up from the Book of Mormon that I have from the six times that I've auditioned for that role. Then also not gotten it. But I keep the cut because it's like a really nice 32-bar cut that shows off voice and character. And that's what they're asking for. So I sang that. It went over well. And then I did the sides. And the sides were the first scene, you know, where I come in and make fun of him and accuse him of jerking off. And the last scene where he, it reveals that I have no friends. And I say, fuck you. And I run away. And I walked out of the room and I was like, that went pretty well, but like, I just don't think it's going to happen. And to this day, I imagine this sort of like scenario where like, you know, all these people are there. And in my head, the person who was like, that's the guy had to have been Michael Greif. Like in hindsight, having known about the situation, who I was at the time, what everybody was prioritizing. And like, I like know in my heart, we've never talked about it. Michael was sort of probably like, look to his left and look to his right and sort of like nodded and was like, that's it, right? Let's try that. You know, it's a week long, you know, reading. I'm getting paid $100. It's no stakes. If I suck, you get somebody else. So I booked it. And it was the kind of scenario where, I had tech for the Nymph show the same week as the reading. And so I sat down with Tom Caruso, who was directing the Nymph show. And I was like, Tom, so I booked this reading and you have to work with me because I will quit. Mm-hmm. Like, and I was like, I hate that I'm saying this at all. I feel disgusting, like giving you this ultimatum, but like, I'll give Nymph their $1,300 back. And like, I have to do this reading. I have to. And everybody worked with everybody. It was really great. I didn't have to drop out of any shows. I had a fun time.
And is everyone who was in that reading, who's in the cast right now?
So, Rachel Bay Jones and Jennifer Laura Thompson and Ben Platt and Michael Park. We're all doing their second reading at that point. And Mike Feist and I, it was our first day. And at that point, Barrett Wilbert Weed was playing Zoe and a girl named Emily Walton was playing Alana. And there were four or five other like ensemble, like kids at school.
So it's changed since then.
It has. It's changed a lot. It was like 300 pages. And it was like, you know, this like snarky Facebook musical that was kind of like a little less like reverent and real and a little more like commenting on like, look what fools we are in our, you know, our modern age. What it has become is a much more sort of grounded, concrete story about a boy, his family, his friends, and the world at large.
So when you think back to that time, and you think back to what Dear Evan Hansen has become in 3 years since that reading?
Yeah.
So the development process happened with you guys,
yes.
Right? And it was developed on you and from you.
100%.
Are there things in that show that came out of you directly?
Yes, absolutely.
All
of it is. I wrote it. I'm one of those actors who, just because of the way I was trained, and I'm the kind of person who I don't really like to ad lib. I don't really like to suggest lines. I don't want to change stuff. Like, I want to, you give me lines and I say them as best I can. And you, the writer, get excited about things I do well and get excited about adjusting things that I don't do well or cutting them. And I think that for me and Steven, that was a really wonderful working relationship.
Steven Levinson,
our book writer. Yeah. Because...
Well, the irony is that you have sort of this less singing or less of your own songs.
Yeah.
And this is such a big acting show for you.
No, I have six bars of solo singing in the whole play.
I mean, obviously you're singing the whole time.
I'm singing a lot, but yeah. So I had a song at the time. I had this crazy song called Going Viral that was like a big punk rock, like patter song, dance number.
Do you remember any of it or how it began, or is it too
I do.
Far
I don't
away?
I don't want to sing any of it. It's really it hurts me.
That is
plus
gone.
I think I'd get in trouble, yeah.
But that it's no longer.
Yeah, no, but it's also it's good that it's gone. Like that was the tough thing. Like Michael called me the day before we were starting rehearsals for DC to tell me that it was gone. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. And he's like, I think you'll find that it gets us to the action of the play much more quickly.
Yeah.
And we will be very happy with the adjustment it makes to the tone. And he was totally right. And I knew he was right. Actually, the nightmare was like he called and he was like, Will, I'm calling with some bad news. And no. I was like, I'm cut from the play. Cut from the play. I'm now going to be played. It's now going to be like a girl. They needed another girl in the play. Or they cut the character entirely. They combined it with Alana and they figured that was the right move. And I was like, I went everywhere. Yeah. And he was like, we've had to cut Going Viral. And I was like, oh, phew.
But I'm still in it.
Yeah, I'm in the play, though. He goes, yes, and I think you'll find that there have been some adjustments to the book, and you'll be quite happy with the amount of material that remains.
Okay.
And
well, we'll see, won't we, Michael?
Yeah, we'll see how it goes at the read-through tomorrow, sir.
Yeah.
And then I went to the Whole Foods in Gowanus, and I got drunk because I was bummed out.
Yeah, your song
with my
was
roommate.
Gone.
My song was gone, and I was like, oh, you know, like... Even though I believed Michael, I was like, you know, it's still a great character. And actually, since then, a lot of content has been added for Jared. Like, so much stuff.
He was telling the truth.
He was telling the truth. He really meant it. He's a very smart director who knows what he's doing. But at the time, I was like, you know, there's a weird perception, though, in our industry. It's like having a song somehow inflates the size of the role a little bit. And so I was just like a little conscious of that. Like, oh, like now it's going to be viewed, even though it won't functionally be that way or feel that way during the show. When people talk about the show, it'll make it like it's in a weird ranking
but
way.
But that has not happened.
No, it hasn't,
that
which
is
really
not
lovely.
Because when you see Dear Evan Hansen, if you can see Dear Evan Hansen, there is nothing about what you're doing that is less than or sidebar. It's so completely front and center to the story and driving the story forward. And you have developed such a brilliantly complex, full human in the play. It's thrilling. And you're in a play. You get to be in a play.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
is a musical.
I get to be in a play and sing backups, which is great, actually.
It's great CD.
Yeah, it's a wonderful.
It's a wonderful
I love the album
CD.
And I love the, and I love the, like, you know, the whole, a lot of content. I got to do a lot more when that song went away, which was really fun for me. You know, I got to sort of all the stuff in the second act where you sort of go on this journey with Jared a little bit about like you sort of watch his and Evan's friendship deteriorate. Like that didn't exist in DC and it certainly didn't exist before that when I had, you know, when I had the number and everything. So it's like, it goes back to like these things have a way of working themselves out in the right way.
Because you and Ben had had a prior relationship in that other play that you were friends in.
Yeah.
You weren't rivals, as I recall.
No, he played an anxiety-riddled high school senior.
Right.
You know, and I played his snarky, perverted friend. So not a lot has changed between us.
But it must have been kind of amazing to go in knowing each
wonderful.
Other already.
Yeah. He was the only person I knew on the first day. I walked into that room. I knew nothing about it. It was so cloak and dagger. It was so secret. And then I walked in and I was like, Ben Platt is here. Oh, thank God. Like, you know, and then I got to know everyone else, obviously, but he was the guy I knew on that first day of school, as it were.
So talk me through a little bit because it's really huge.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
And you're at the center of it. And I imagine your life has changed in certain ways. So how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
It's a long run now.
It's been a long run. That's a weird thing to adjust to. You kind of are reminded of how important your technique is, because as an actor...
Have you had vocal trouble, or have you been able to...
You know, I've been okay. I had a little trouble around Tony season, as I think everyone did, just because we were doing so much extra stuff.
And just so much press and rehearsal for the Tonys as well, and all that. Right.
But no, for me, it's actually more about the acting technique. It's about, like, this idea that you have to sort of, like... put yourself in a neutral place and remind yourself of your intentions and just say the words as simply as possible, because any tricks that you may have been using to get through before that are not going to work on show 500 and whatever we're on. You know, it's like I'm constantly reminded of how much I need to just like say the lines and then it works, you know, and people say like, how do you keep it fresh? And like, I think there's a bit of a misnomer in that, because if you come see my show in previews, I'm not any more or less emotionally invested in it than I am when you see the 300th show. The difference is at previews, I'm trying to figure out where to stand. So, you know, so there's always, or like maybe you'll see it right after previews. And now I'm very concerned because there might be press in the audience and or Tony voters or, you know, whatever. And so there's always something in your brain that is not the play. And the trick is, if you are doing technically sound work, you will still do the play well despite those distractions.
Sure.
And so when those distractions are gone and all you have is the play, that's the moment where you're like, oh, I really need to like sink into these words and these actions and these things, these relationships, because otherwise I'm gonna wander away with my mind.
Right.
You know, and it's...
My recollection... when I've done a few very long runs, and it would happen mostly on a two-show day. Mm-hmm. And by the way, when we did your Good Man Charlie Brown, we had three-show days at one point, which was this insane,
what?
Like...
That's crazy.
If we gave you Monday and Tuesday off, could you do 17 shows on Saturday? We're like, that's a lot of shows. BD?
Oh my God.
BD, is that okay? I think BD Wong was our equity deputy.
is that in the rules?
That feels like a lot of shows. Like, are we at Macy's?
Maybe. Who
What's
knows?
Happening?
Yeah.
But I remember I would say a line and be like, did I already say that?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that was the matinee. Like, you would get, like...
I get a cold sweat in my lower back. I get it midway through a line when I'm like, I don't know if I said the beginning of this line.
It's totally
and
like...
it just, it's like all the hairs on my arm stand on end. I get a cold sweat in my low back, and I'm like, well, there's nothing to do now. Whatever came out, came out.
No one's looking at
me funny.
You
don't
even
know. And that's the other thing. I don't get to look at anyone.
Right. It's
I'm
all...
playing out. I'm direct address the whole play for the most part.
But at this point, the audience knows your play so well, they probably could help you out.
Oh my God,
there
literally.
There are repeat offenders,
I could just
as
call
it were.
For a line and it'll come to me from the mezzanine or the front row.
Right. Z102 is like, no, you didn't say it yet. That's the wrong slide. The slide is not matching.
My God.
So you are playing someone who, there are many characters who are perceived as angels in this play, like Zoe and the mom.
Yeah, right.
And then Jared is sort of perceived as the bully
in
the show. And there's so much contact with your audience outside of the play itself.
Yeah.
So how has that been for you to become super famous, super fast, at the center of this incredibly vulnerable, beautiful piece? That's a lot social commentary, and then just really a play about a family, as you said.
You know, I think that the publicity and the fan aspect of the show has been very overwhelming for me. You know, it's very like the way I walk through Midtown is very different, and I'm very like head down. You know, I don't really like to, especially after the show, I don't really want to take pictures. I don't want to sign things. And it's just because the show is so fatiguing. I mean, even though I'm in the comedic role, and I, you know, I don't have to like bawl my eyes out, but, it is so exhausting, and it feels so like it's so unaffected. Like there's no like character. It's like me making like minor tweaks to like what I instinctively do to make myself a little more coarse and a little less emotionally intelligent. Yeah, but it feels very much like me. So in that regard, it feels very vulnerable. And then it's very difficult for me when people can't separate the character I play in the play from A, the person who I am, but between those two things, like the actor brand that I put out in the world. You know, so it's like,
there, what does that mean, the actor brand?
Well, I think, like, you know, like in the age of social media, you know, especially our show has asked us to be very active and to, you know, to tweet or to be on Instagram or to be on whatever.
To be available to your audience.
Yeah, well, to aid in sort of raising the profile of the show, you know, and it's, you know, they want us to be accessible and to be humans and to be ourselves. But the problem for me is that I you know, I think I vary from some of my colleagues in this way. Like, I have no interest in putting, like, myself out for the world because there's no real way to do that. So what I put out there is like what I want to put out to the world, which I think is what we all put on social media, and we misconstrue it as who everybody is. But I'm like, you know, if we're like out late at night, I don't want to like put like us at the bar on my Snap story. Like we're off duty, you know. That's like, this is my time. But I love to use social media to like promote things I like and like announce things that I'm doing, and you know, sort of like. Lately, I've been tweeting a lot about bowling, which I think like is really, I think people are very confused by that. I sort of like the chaos that sows in the world. Yeah, but like one of my favorite things is like, you know, if like my friend Joy Clonis is doing a show, like I'll just tweet the shit out of that because I believe, you know, I have 25,000 Twitter followers, whatever it is. I believe every one of them would be better off if they went to see that show.
Right.
And I'm still in my life trying to figure out like, oh, like I wonder if anyone will buy a ticket to the show. Like, if I tweet to 25,000 people, can I sell one ticket? I don't know.
Right.
You know?
And I'm still, well, we'll look at the analytics.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
That.
We'll find the conversions.
Well, what is the response to you when people see you off stage? Do they treat you like Jared and they get into it with you? Are they mad at you for being mad? Do they take it personally in some way and feel like they have to defend Evan Hansen to you?
You know, sometimes people will say these things like, you know, I haven't gone out and done the stage door in a while, but, you know, people invariably, every night someone would say something like, hey, you know, you're a real jerk, but you're funny. And I'm like, oh, I get that you think that's funny, but it's not funny. It just is annoying.
Does that hurt your feelings?
It does. It hurts my feelings.
He just called you a jerk.
Yeah, someone just called me a jerk.
And you're a human being.
Yeah, but I'm not a human being. I'm an actor to them. And so it's like, I'm a character.
Do you get recognized all the time?
All the time. And there are certain places where I'm a little, like, my guard is down a little bit more. So, like, you know, like I was on the street in Park Slope where I live, and someone was like, oh, like you were in the play, like I loved the, you know, the show, blah blah blah. Like, do you mind taking a picture? Like, my daughter's gonna be so jealous that we met. I'm like, oh, sure, that's fine.
When you look back at the beginning, does it make sense to you that Dear Evan Hansen exploded in the way that it did? Did it happen gradually when you're inside it, or did it feel like a tsunami of sorts?
You know, it definitely. We knew the show was special from the beginning, you know, from that first reading. I mean, we're all sitting around, we're wiping the tears out of our eyes, and we're like, oh, this is an amazing moment that we're in here. In that moment, you don't know what's going to happen with the show. And I was fresh off this heartbreak from The Black Suits,
right,
which was a show that meant so much to me and had a similar kind of feeling. Like, you're in the room and you're like, this is special. There's something happening here. So I was kind of cautious. Because I was like, this show's great, but like, are people gonna like it? Are people who write about it gonna be kind to it and kind to the people in it? You know, and then like we got into performances in DC and there were people very excited about the show, which was really amazing. I mean, there were people who were like, I flew here from Seattle because I loved Next to Normal and I heard this was Michael Greif's new play, or I love Bench Pasek and Justin Paul, or I love Ben Platter, I love Michael Greif, or I love, you know, Michael Park, I'm a big As the World Turns fan, or I loved Laura Dreyfus on Glee, or, you know, so these people were very excited. So we only got people who were like really invested at first, and DC theater goers.
Right.
But, you know, I had friends like come down from the city. It was very easy to get to by train, but it was big from the beginning. The response was big, and the stage door in DC was very pleasant because it was like, you know, there were never more than like a dozen people out there, and they all had like, very, you know, the show had clearly affected them.
Yeah.
You know, and the theater was telling us like, oh, this is, you know, we don't usually get this here. We're not used to having people hanging out at the stage door. So this is very cool. So it got buzzy at that moment. And then we got great notices, you know, great reviews. And then we came to New York and we made some pretty major changes from DC to New York. We, you know, three new songs went in and some scenes went out and some scenes went in and all that stuff happened. And we were like, you know, then, you know, now we're like, okay, so it was like, it went well in DC, but like, is
how
it going to
go
well
New
in New York?
Right.
I mean, this is what really, this is it. This is what matters. And again, it was, you know, I mean, our opening night at Second Stage, the most incredible thing happened. We finished the show and we bowed and they applauded and we went upstairs and, I truly like had my shirt off. I was changing and there was a page and Judy, our stage manager, paged us and said, would the acting company please return to the stage? They want you to take another bow. They had, those 300 people had not stopped applauding in the time it took us to climb four flights of stairs and come back down. And that was the moment, I think, for me where I was like, oh, this is going to be enormous.
And now you have Beyonce.
And Beyonce really liked it.
She did really like it.
She did. She
but
was very confident.
Every night it's sort of a Beyonce.
There's... Yeah, we've had some people whose work I am just over the moon about. I mean, I love Beyonce. I think it's cool to meet like very famous people. It was cool to meet like Katy Perry and Cory Booker, but Rick Moranis came to the play and Julianne Moore and Gary Oldman and like these actors whose work I think is like the greatest acting anyone has ever done. And then they like look me in the eyes and they're like, they tell me something insightful about my work. And it goes back to that need for compliments that I'm
yes,
seeking.
Which is what started the whole thing.
But it really, I mean, it's something to me when someone whose work I respect so incredibly makes an insightful observation about my work, whether or not they're saying something nice. I mean, usually you say something nice because if you don't have something nice to say, you don't say anything at all.
Yes.
But, you know, but to have someone... like Steve Carell's another one, like such a beautiful, heartful actor who's also so funny and so smart and seems to be have so much agency over the work he creates. To have him like comment on the character that I've developed is like,
so
like
how
my
does
mind
it work?
Explodes.
Like does stage management let you know? Like
yes, we have a little whiteboard with
yes.
names on it, and they, and
is
they
that
say,
what happens?
Yes, and there's never
the
a guarantee
guests?
That any of those people will visit, but they saw the show this evening, and you know, hopefully they will.
They'll be in the Bloomingdale's
in the Bloomingdale's blue room.
Blue room. That's how it happens.
Yeah.
Well, I got to go in the Bloomingdale's blue room, and you were very super sweet to
aww.
Us. And now that are you staying with the show?
I am. I'll be around until May.
Until May.
Yeah.
So it's going to feel new and different now.
Yeah, it's going to be wonderful. I can't wait to get Noah and Taylor in.
Is everybody else staying for now?
Everybody's going to be around at least through I think March, April, May is all sort of when we'll start to trickle out for various other things or whatever else is going on, or maybe just back to the day job for me, or
yes,
maybe a vacation.
Lighting design.
Yeah, lighting design, the auction house, the, you know.
Will, you are so brilliant in this show. I am so sorry for people who misconstrue your character and you, because you're both hilarious, but you ooze empathy and kindness, and what you bring to that show is remarkable. Thank you,
Will. Thank you so much, Alana. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. If you want more information about my guests, go to the website littleknownfactspodcast.com. I also wanted to tell you that there is now a new addition to the website. It is a button that says contributions. This podcast is a true labor of love, and I really, really want to keep doing it for a long time. So if you like listening as much as I love to do it, please feel free to contribute. It would mean the world to me. Also, on Twitter, you can find me at Alana Levine. Instagram is Little Known Facts Podcast, and on Facebook, Little Known Facts Podcast. You can also feel free to rate and review the show on the iTunes show page. This podcast is recorded at Hangar Studios in New York City. This episode was brought to you by Pro Media. Located in Times Square, Pro Media offers both production and post-production services out of its beautiful studios in the heart of New York City. Pro Media, sound vision. Find out more at promedia.nyc.